The Oracle Network.
Look deeper. Hi there, friends, and welcome to a very special episode of Mask of Sanity. I'm your host, Melanie Peterson, and today is going to be a first for the show. I am honored to be joined by fellow Oracle Network member, the host of True Consequences, Eric Carter Lundin. Eric is a wonderful person. He's an extremely talented podcaster, and I could go on and on about how awesome his shows True Consequences and Dos Buqueños are. And side note, if you don't already listen to these shows, run, don't walk, run, and subscribe to them. They are so well done. Dos Buqueños is a lot of fun. They talk about paranormal and ghost stories, and True Consequences talks about true crime cases in the American Desert Southwest, and a lot of them are in New Mexico, where Eric currently lives. But again, as amazing as Eric is, we have a different reason for why he's here today on Mask of Sanity. When Eric was little, his baby brother, Jacob Jeremiah Lundin, was murdered, and Jacob, as well as Eric, and Eric's mother, and others who love them, have yet to get the justice they deserve in this case. As a warning, this conversation will talk about child abuse and the abuse and murder of a 9-month-old baby, so please proceed with caution. This will be difficult to listen to, but it is so important for Jacob and Eric and his mother that this case is kept in the public's eye so that justice can finally be served and the person responsible for Jacob's murder is held accountable. Without any further ado, this is my conversation with Eric Carter Lundin. All right, friends, I am here with Eric Carter Lundin, the host of True Consequences and co-host of Dos Buqueños. Eric, welcome, and thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. You know, I love both your shows. I love True Consequences, and I'm guessing most people know that there's a bit of a backstory to it, but I want you to go into that a little bit if you want and explain what True Consequences is and how it evolved. Where did it start from and what it has become for you?
Sure. So I've always been into weird things since I was pretty young. You know, I was always kind of obsessed with the paranormal. Things like mafia stories and true crime stories have always fascinated me. Mm-hmm. I think that probably comes from my history. It probably comes from my experience. You know, I want to understand some of the more subtle and unexplainable things in the world. And I also want to understand what drives humans to behave in deviant ways. And mm-hmm. so that's always been a fascination of mine. But I didn't start True Consequences until October of 2019. And I just kind of had an aha moment because, you know, I've been fighting for justice for my brother for a long time. But I really didn't have a platform. I really didn't have a way to share that story. And I didn't necessarily really want to, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to talk about because it's so painful. But, you know, I kind of had a moment where I was like, well, you know, maybe I won't tell Jacob's story, but maybe I can tell other people's stories that are in the same situation as my family. And maybe I can help a little bit by amplifying their voices and giving them a platform to share their stories in their words without having to feel like their words are going to be edited in a way that changes the meaning or changes the context, and give them that chance to really share where they're at. You know, the traditional media sources, the corporate media sources, really, unless you have something new to talk about with a case or something sexier or exciting, they really won't give family members the time of day.
Right.
And that's unfortunate, you know, and I get it. It's a business. They have to do what they have to do, but it makes it very disheartening for people who are trying to get the story out there and trying to get the facts out there. They can be sometimes limited.
Mm-hmm.
So I was sitting in my car listening to way more true crime podcasts than anybody should ever listen to in their life.
We all do.
I was traveling a lot. I was traveling a lot for work, and I just kind of had a moment where I was like, I could do this. I could do something like this, and I can create something like this to help people in my community. And so that was always the idea, was to create something focused specifically on New Mexico, because there's so many nuances and there's so many challenges with our justice system. And there's a lot of people that don't really understand why things are the way that they are. So True Consequences was born out of that. My first episode was about the Toy Box Killer, which is, you know, the most infamous serial rapist and presumed serial killer out of New Mexico.
Right.
Any true crime buff knows who he is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so True Consequences actually came from the name of the town near where that happened, which was Truth or Consequences.
Okay. I didn't know that part. That's interesting.
Yeah. So that's the name. I didn't want it to be, you know, cheesy. And it feels like a perfect name for a true crime show, honestly.
Absolutely. I'm a little jealous. It's a great title.
So that's how it was born. And then as the platform started to grow, you know, I found myself kind of looking at the interactions I was having with victims' families. And mm-hmm. one moment in particular, I was talking to a mom who her son was brutally murdered for no reason and left in the desert to die from exposure after he had been beaten brutally.
Oh my gosh.
And we were talking about the state of recidivism in New Mexico and the fact that there are laws in place that allow people who are violent offenders to be held without bail. Released without bail
mm-hmm.
to their own recognizance. And what happens is that these people, majority, you know, drug driven, some are just involved in the crime world in general,
mm-hmm.
but they're violent offenders that use, you know, they use weapons and they hurt people and they get out. They go home while they're pending trial, and then they commit more crime. And that was the case with her son's killer. He was one of those violent offenders that had been in and out of jail.
Okay.
The same is true for the people responsible for Victoria Martin's death. You know, this is all connected and related. And so I was talking to her and I said, we can't be silent about this anymore. We have to talk about it. Because if you ignore it, it's going to continue to happen. What you ignore, you permit. And I kind of felt like a punch in the gut to myself.
Yeah.
I'm really good at doing that to myself, actually, like saying something and then being like, oh, crap, that's for me.
Yeah. It's a blessing and a curse, because nobody wants to be punched in the gut like that. But the realization that comes from it is what has led you to where you are now.
For sure. For sure. But it, you know, to do it to yourself is not very funny.
Either. No, it's not fun at all.
So I said, okay, fair enough. Like if this is what I believe and this is what I'm telling people, then I need to step up and be true to my word. So I called my mom and I said, Mom, I think I want to tell Jacob's story.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her if she would help me. And she said, yes. And so that's how we planned the interview. We were very nervous about it. And that was the first time that we ever actually spoke about Jacob's case together. Ever.
Wow.
So what you're hearing is a very raw, a very real conversation in real time. I didn't edit very much of it.
Mm-hmm.
There were some parts of it that were a little too intense that I took out.
Okay.
But
they're still incredibly heartbreaking. Those three episodes are some of the hardest episodes that I've ever listened to. And if it's okay with you, I'm going to link them in the episode notes when I release this, because I think everybody should go and listen to them. because it's one thing to hear secondhand about traumatic situations like that, but it's something entirely different to hear it from the people that it has directly affected. So I want to help get those episodes out there too, because they're must listens, especially for what you're trying to do.
Yeah, it was hard. I'm a very private person. I don't like putting everything out there like this, but it's kind of what I'm forced to do at this point in order to get Jacob's name out there, because his case is not famous. You know, people don't know his name broadly. It's not a JonBenet Ramsey. It's not a Shanann Watts or Susan Powell or any of these other cases that are very famous, because it happened so long ago.
Right.
It never made the local media when it happened. And so there's just a lot of work that I need to do to get it out there. And I've been trying very hard. It hasn't been easy.
From the minute that I met you, we connected not long before the Oracle Network became a thing, or like right around that time. And that's, I think, right around the time that you released those episodes with your mom. And I can remember just thinking, like, I've known people who've been affected by crimes like that, but I've never known somebody in your situation where it was a younger brother like this, like a direct family member. And it just completely broke my heart. And that's why I wanted to have you on. I wanted to start doing interviews with family members of these victims, because it's so important to get these stories out there, especially when it's been 30 plus years and nothing's happened.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that.
Of course.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of good that can come out of the true crime genre. And there's a lot of bad that can come out of the true crime genre. And I think giving family members a voice is probably the better side of things.
Absolutely.
The detrimental side is when people start leaking information because they got a hot scoop that could damage a case, or when they start sensationalizing people's trauma, or when they start speculating wildly about things. You know, those things can be very harmful. And so thank you for honoring families and for giving them a voice, because that's hugely important. I think it is the future of true crime podcasting, and the future of true crime in general is to be very victim focused. And I think people are going to start to see very soon, you know, that profiting off of the backs of people's trauma is not the way to go.
No, it's not. It's not at all. I agree. And thank you for saying that. I mean, I would hope that all of us who have a true crime show would strive to do the same, but like you said, it's clearly not the case. There are some people that are in this to make money, and that is it. And that just never sat well with me at all. I donate everything that I earn, because it sickens me. I don't want to profit off of tragedy.
And I would say that there's nothing wrong with, you know, earning a living. If this is your living, like, go ahead.
Sure.
But be respectful and mindful of the families that you're talking about, and the victims that you're talking about, because that is the only reason that you're doing this, right? So I just don't have any patience for hybristophiles and people that sensationalize and romanticize murder. It's just disgusting.
It is, very much so. I will never understand that. So do you want to tell me about Jacob?
Sure.
About what you remember about him, and kind of go into what happened.
Yeah, I'll just say too, I'm sure you'll probably put a disclaimer here, but this is going to be a pretty intense story. Yeah. It involves child abuse and sexual abuse and domestic violence, and some people can't listen to that, and that's okay.
Right.
But if you can listen to it, and if you need to fast forward through some of the more intense parts, like, feel free. But it's an important story. And I think that the problem and the struggle with domestic violence situations and with child abuse situations is that they are very difficult to hear about. They're very difficult to talk about. They're often difficult to believe that that anybody's capable of doing the things that I'm about to tell you about. But that's because people don't talk about it. And so I would just ask that, you know, try, you know, yeah. because it is so important to know, not just because of Jacob's story, but for other people's own knowledge. There are signs that you can look for. There are things that you need to watch out for that are patterns that happen all the time in almost every case.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can be aware of those things, you can potentially help protect yourself and protect others from falling into these situations.
Right.
So I was born in Socorro, New Mexico in 1980. And it's a small town. It's about 75 miles south of Albuquerque, which is the largest city in our state.
Mm-hmm.
I was born, my mom and dad married very young. They were married when my mom was 17 and I think my dad was 20. My dad was a Pentecostal evangelist. And so within a few years after they got married, we moved to Texas because my dad had some opportunities to go preach in Texas. And he was a traveling evangelist. You know, you think about the people in the tent
mm-hmm.
and, you know, they're like speaking in tongues and praying for people and stuff like that. That was what he did.
Okay.
And he would leave for extended periods of time and would often leave my mom just to take care of me, and often without money or food. And, you know, I had been praying for a little brother because I was an only child and I was a little bit lonely. And I told my mom that I believed that she was going to have a baby boy, that she was going to get pregnant, and she did not believe me.
Aww.
But then she did get pregnant and she did have a baby boy, and it was Jacob. And things with my parents started to get worse for them. My mom was really starting to resent having to subside or like rely on the kindness of strangers to eat, to feed us. And then she found out that my dad was having somewhat of an emotional affair with another woman. And that was it for her. She was done. So we moved back to New Mexico so that she could be closer to my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
That way she would be able to work. You know, my grandmother, and my aunts could help take care of us while she was working. She could support us. And it just was a better situation because she actually had support around her. When we were in Texas, it was just us.
Right.
Jacob was incredible. And it's interesting, people, you know, they seem surprised sometimes when I talk about him and what I remember about him, but he had such a huge personality, even at such a young age, that it sticks with me. You know, he made a huge impact on my life. He was this bundle of joy and a little bit crazy. He was a bit of a daredevil. He was fearless.
Aww.
He loved to do very dangerous things. If it wasn't crazy, he wasn't really having fun. So one example was he used to be in his baby swing, and he would, when it swung forward, he would reach forward and grab the front bars of the legs of the swing. And then uh-huh. as the swing went backwards, the whole thing would go backwards, and he would lay on the ground and lie there laughing. You know, he was nuts. And I was this like cautious, timid, fearful kid.
Yeah.
And here's this like giant baby. He was 10 pounds when he was born, who has no fear, who just does the most insane stuff and thinks it's hilarious. And I was baffled by him. I didn't understand him. But he, you know, he had this laugh that was infectious and bizarre. It sounded a little bit like a frog. It was like, like that's how he laughed.
Oh my gosh.
I've never heard anybody laugh like that.
No, that's awesome. Sounds like he kind of opened you up a bit, brightened you up.
He did. And he loved to dance. He loved music. He loved anything going fast. You know, he liked to be just messing with stuff. He would pull all the drawers out of the kitchen, cabinets and knives and stuff would be flying around, and he's just sitting there laughing. It's like super dangerous. And, you know, in the 80s, there were no childproof locks for
not
cabinets.
Really.
Or,
no.
And there was baby gates. That's all we yes. had. We had baby gates. We didn't have anything else. So, yeah, it was free game for for babies at that
free
age.
Free game for the knives to be flying around. No big deal.
Yeah. And so shortly after my mom moved back home, this man started kind of coming around. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't a stranger. He was really well known to my mom and my family. He was my dad's best friend. So he knew all about what was happening. Mm-hmm. His father married my parents. His father was a minister at a church that my family went to. My mom went to school with him. They went to church together. They've known each other their entire lives. You know, our families are super connected to each mm-hmm. other. My uncle, my mom's brother, married his sister. So wow. I'm not going to name him because
no.
It could damage the case, and I don't want that to happen. So
right, absolutely.
So I'll call him. Let's call him Joe for the sure. sake of clarity.
You can call him whatever
here.
You want at this point, because
I have a lot of things that I call him. But yeah, I'm not going to.
I'm sure
not
you
use
do
that today. He came around and he started to love bomb my mom and I, and we didn't know what that was back then. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there was a word for it yet. But basically, it's a practice that predators will use to ingratiate themselves with you, to gain your trust, to gain your dependence and reliance on them. Mm-hmm. And so my mom and I are starved for that type of attention. You know, my mom was in a relationship where it was very one-sided and she was very lonely most of the time. Mm-hmm. I was missing my father. I didn't have a father really. He was not around. So this man shows up and starts, you know, offering us attention and affection and financial support mm-hmm. and love, or what we thought was love. And I remember early on, you know, it was almost like perfect. It was almost too perfect. Whatever I wanted, whatever I asked for, we would do that. That would happen. If I said, I want to have candy all day and I want to watch movies all day, that's what we would do. If I wanted to go to the park, we would go to the park. So it was amazing for a kid, right? And then my mom, of course, was like, this is great. I've been so alone for so long. Now this yeah. person's here helping me.
Right.
And he loves my kids.
Kind of like a knight in shining armor, almost, is this savior exactly. that swooped in and rescued exactly. you all.
And these types of people, they will look for people who are vulnerable, people who are emotionally vulnerable, mm-hmm. physically vulnerable, financially vulnerable, and they will leverage that and use that against you. And so he took our emotional and financial vulnerability and made us dependent on him. And my mom and him started dating, and quickly we moved in with him. Mm-hmm. It was a whirlwind. And then
how soon after he came into your lives did you guys move in?
It was a matter of weeks.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know the exact time frame, but
sure, just ballpark. But yeah, that's fast.
Based on the timeline and based on, you know, the way everything lines up, it would have been within 2 or 3 weeks is my wow. my thought. And again, my mom knew him.
Yeah. Oh, of course. There was already that foundation there. She had no reason not to trust him.
Right. There's no reason to think that he was anything other than what she knew of him.
Right.
And you know, there's people in the community that loved him, and he was respected, and he was, you know, considered to be a great guy. And shortly after we moved in, Jacob started to have injuries that were unexplainable at the time. And then I started to be blamed by Joe for causing these injuries. He told my mom that I was jealous of Jacob and that I hit Jacob and I kicked Jacob in the head and I picked him up out of the crib. And there were just all these things that were coming out from him. And Jacob ended up with a really bad brain injury, a skull fracture.
Mm-hmm.
And he was bleeding internally and he had brain fluid leaking under his skin. And so they had to lance his head and they had to drain it and they had to wrap him up, bandage him, and put a styrofoam helmet on his head.
Oh my gosh.
So that he could heal.
Yeah.
And at this point, my mom doesn't know what to believe. I don't remember being jealous of Jacob, but I'm not saying that it's not possible that I was jealous, and I'm not saying that it's not possible that I hit him. I don't remember those things happening, but siblings do fight. Siblings do get jealous. That does happen.
Yeah.
I don't think that I would have had the force of strength to fracture his skull.
No.
Because
how old were you at this time? 5?
Yeah, I was only 6.
6? Okay. Yeah, no.
And I was small. I was a very small kid. I'd be lucky if I weighed 40 pounds at that point.
Okay, then definitely not.
Definitely
not strong enough.
And he was huge, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think he was probably close to 20 pounds at this point. So my mom didn't really know what to think. So she called my dad and asked him if he could take me to California to get me out of that situation. And so I was sent there.
Mm-hmm.
And Jacob's injuries continued. They didn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mom really started to limit how much time Joe would be able to be alone with Jacob, and it was virtually non-existent. Like, there was pretty much zero times after things kept happening that that Jacob was alone with him.
Mm-hmm.
But after his first head injury, Joe's ex-wife showed up at my mom's work and pulled her aside and said, "You need to call Child Protective Services on Joe." That was unprovoked. It was unexpected.
Wow.
And my mom remembers that, but she didn't really do anything because there was already a small investigation happening by Child Protective Services.
Into Joe?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. A neighbor had called and reported that he was abusing Jacob. But what happened was the investigator showed up at our house and was asking my mom questions, and Joe showed up and started yelling at the investigator and chased her off the property. And then they had another meeting in person, but nothing ever happened. So I don't know why the investigator didn't take it seriously, but if a neighbor is calling to anonymously report abuse, it has to be either very visible to that person,
mm-hmm.
or they can hear what's happening.
Right.
And for that, it had to be pretty severe, at least in my mind.
Right. No, for sure. How do you think she knew? Did she know about the investigation, or did she just come to your mom separately because of his past behavior with, he has other children, correct?
Yeah, he has 2 children. I don't know why she did it.
Hmm.
You know, I can only guess, but it was separate from that investigation.
Okay.
It was prior to the investigation.
Okay. Okay.
But I just bring it up because I think it says a lot.
Absolutely.
So, you know,
it's a red flag.
There's going to be things that kind of seem contradictory or conflicting, you know.
Yeah.
I'm being blamed for this. Is it possible? It could be happy. I mean, it could be possible that I hurt Jacob in some way. That, you know, I'm not saying that that's not possible, but I'm just trying to paint a full picture of what's going on.
Right.
And I'll let the listener decide, you know, and I think he's responsible, and I have a lot of reasons why I think he's responsible. But I don't know for sure what happened because I wasn't there when it happened. So, one night my grandmother's watching Jacob and she wants to go to church. It's a Wednesday night. And so my mom's almost off work. It's about an hour left in her shift. My mom's working at a local grocery store. And my grandmother calls my mom at work and says, "Hey, I want to go to church. What should I do with Jacob?" My mom says, "Well, I'm going to be off in an hour. I guess you can take him to Joe's. It's only going to be an hour. What's the worst that could happen in an hour?" And it immediately, she started to have this panic, this feeling of dread, like something was going to happen. Something bad was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So she went to her boss and she said, "I need you to let me off work early." And her boss kind of laughed her off and said, "You're fine. You know, you're almost off. Just finish your shift. It's busy right now." So she tried to keep herself busy. And within a matter of minutes, Joe comes running into the grocery store in a panic. And at the same time, there's a fire. I mean, there's an ambulance speeding by on the road, mm-hmm. with sirens on. And he tells my mom that Jacob is unconscious, that there was an accident and he hit his head and he was vomiting and that he was being rushed to the hospital. And so my mom left work, went to the hospital. She got to see Jacob before they airlifted him.
Mm-hmm.
She went up to him, she touched him on his chest and he took a deep breath. And then they took him to Albuquerque and he was rushed into emergency surgery. My family got up there. It's about 75 miles away, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor came to meet my mom to talk to her about what was going on. You know, there was severe brain swelling and a subdural hematoma, and they had to do surgery to try to release the pressure on his brain. And the entire time that the doctor's talking with my mom and with Joe, Joe is saying, "I can't believe this is happening to me. This isn't going to look good for me. This is going to look very bad for me. Why is this happening to me?"
All about him.
Yeah. And wow. The only reason I know that is because the doctor actually mentioned that in his notes, which was alarming to him. You know, he said that it seemed like Joe had way more concern for himself than he did. In fact, that he had no concern for Jacob.
Right.
Or for my mom. Which is another red flag. Jacob didn't make it, mm-hmm. through surgery.
I'm so sorry, Eric. Like, I've heard you tell this story so many times. And it just hits me the same way every time, because I don't understand how somebody could do that to a baby.
Yeah.
And deny it.
It's definitely horrifying,
mm-hmm.
you know. And to think, like, you know, Jacob's personality had changed towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
He used to love to do crazy things, like I said. But around the time that I was sent to California, he didn't even like to be picked up. If it wasn't my mom, he would panic. Mm. And if you picked him up over your head, he would start clawing at your hair and screaming. It's like, it just breaks my heart to think, mm-hmm. about what he went through.
Yeah. And not being able to communicate
exactly
what was happening because he's 9 months old.
Yeah.
The only way he could communicate was by screaming and yelling and clawing.
Yeah. There were definitely warning signs, you know?
Yeah.
And I would just say, like, for anybody listening, like, these are the things you need to look out for. If you have suspicions, like, pay attention, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why people feel the way they feel. You know, we have instincts, we have survival skills, we have things that are built into our genetics that tell us when something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like hocus pocus, it's not like woo-woo crystal energy, any of that stuff. It is
right.
Genetically ingrained in our bodies.
Right.
We
have our own little internal warning system built in.
Yeah. It's just like how animals know when a hurricane is coming. It's the same exact thing.
Exactly. Yep.
So I was woken up very early in the morning by my father. We had to fly back to New Mexico. And I would say pretty quickly after we got there, there was an investigation and mm-hmm. I was interrogated by the police. And I know they call it an interview.
Yeah.
But I call it an interrogation because it definitely felt like an interrogation. It was scary.
You're 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't there.
It was very scary for me.
Yeah.
You know, I before I was taken into the interview room, Joe pulled me aside and grabbed my shoulders tightly and said, "Don't lie. Don't you dare lie. You know what happens to people who lie." And so when you read the notes on my interview, it says that I'm very agitated. And that I was asked if I ever hit Jacob, and I said no.
Mm-hmm.
And then they asked me if I knew who hit Jacob, and I said I don't know. And then they asked me if Joe ever hit me, and I said no, but he always acts like he's going to. And it's basically what I remember from that. Aside from being terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And we buried Jacob. My dad decided that he was going to go back to Texas. And so after the funeral and everything, he called me over to his motel and, you know, told me, "I'm going to call you on your birthday, and I'm going to see you soon, and we're going to go to Disneyland." And
mm-hmm.
he gave me a bike. And then that was the last time I saw him until I was about 15.
Wow.
He just disappeared. And meanwhile, Joe is trying to convince my mom to meet him at the graveyard, at Jacob's grave, to talk to her. Which
that's sick.
I don't understand. I don't understand that.
Nope.
It's definitely the last place she wanted to be at that time.
Yeah.
And so I can't help but wonder what kind of things he was thinking of accomplishing by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know that he was responsible until one day that he had been trying to contact my mom over and over again. He was leaving notes on her car. He would have family members deliver letters to her. He would follow her around town trying to get her attention.
Wow.
I have a bunch of these letters on my desk. But, excuse me, one day he got brave and went to my grandparents' house. My grandfather moved faster than I've ever seen him move in my life. went running outside, so I followed him. He ran up to his car and started knocking on the window and said, "Why don't you hit somebody who can talk, you son of a bitch?"
Wow.
And that's when I figured it out. That's when I was like, oh, he must have done something to Jacob.
Yeah.
Somehow he weaseled his way back in to my mom's life and my life, and they ended up being together again, and that's when things got very, very bad.
Mm-hmm.
He was extremely abusive, physically, mentally, emotionally, sexually. It's basically anything you could think of.
Yeah.
You know? And when you're in a situation with somebody like this, you can't do anything. There's nothing that you can do that's going to stop them from behaving this way.
Right.
And they like to make you think that it's your fault
mm-hmm.
that they're behaving this way.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't make them so mad.
Master manipulators.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
If you wouldn't make them mad, they wouldn't have to hit you. If you wouldn't give them dirty looks, they wouldn't have to hit you. You know, all of those things. And so that's just another layer of programming that they do
mm-hmm.
and they use to brainwash you and to convince you that you are powerless against them. And it's not true.
Right.
These people are cowards.
Yep.
The only reason they use these mind games to control people is because that's the only way they can get people to do what they want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if you actually stand up to them, they cower away pretty quickly. So,
How long did that go on after Jacob's death?
It was about 5 years.
Wow.
5 years of him beating my mom mercilessly every day. 5 years of me being locked in my room for hours and hours at a time. And then he molested me. And he told me that if I ever said anything to anybody, he would kill my mom. And he would kill me. And nobody would ever know where we were.
That's unbelievable. I am so sorry.
He constantly threatened my mom.
Yeah.
He would tell her basically every day that the only way she was going to leave him was in a body bag. And
you were so young, you probably just wanted to protect your mom and yourself, but your mom too.
Yeah. And, there was another situation where he had strangled her and nearly killed her with a wire hanger, but I had broken some windows in their bedroom, which caused him to run outside and chase me and give him enough time to get away.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mom didn't leave until one day she found out something. Joe had been calling my grandparents' house every day to talk to my cousin, my 14-year-old cousin at the time,
mm-hmm.
and try to convince her to engage with him in sexual abuse. People like to say sex with minors. Media likes to say sex with minors. It's not a thing. Minors cannot consent.
No.
It is sexual abuse. It is sexual assault.
It's rape. It is
rape. I wish
rape
people would call
child.
It what it is.
Yep.
Yeah. Because words matter.
Yes, they do.
There's no such thing as a sexual relationship with a minor.
Not at all.
So he was trying to abuse her. But he didn't know her. He didn't know that she was the type of person that didn't care what anybody thought about anything ever. And she gave him enough rope to let him hang himself with, basically, and then went to the entire family and told everybody, even though he said, don't tell anybody. I think she was she's a lot like Jacob in that sense that she wasn't afraid, you know?
Yeah.
And she saved my life. And she saved my mom's life because that was what my mom needed. I think that my mom felt like if she was the only one suffering his abuse, then she could deal with it. But once he started targeting other people, and had she known about me, I believe that it would have been the same result.
Yeah. So she didn't know that he was sexually abusing you either?
Mm-mm, not until later.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't tell her, because I didn't want her to die.
Right.
So she confronted him, and we left. And he stalked us for a good 3 years after we left. He would follow us. He would come to the house. He would knock on my bedroom window and tell me that he was going to kill me every night. And my mom went to the DA to ask the DA to reopen the investigation into Jacob's case. The DA said no. He said that my mom changed her story. And he basically believed that, because when the police asked my mom if she thought Joe could possibly be responsible for Jacob's death, she said, "I don't think so." And so he used that, and the fact that she was getting divorced from him, to make a decision basically that she was just a woman scorned who was trying to make trouble for her poor husband who worked for the county that everybody loved. And so he refused to do anything, even though the police had arrested him.
Mm-hmm.
So he was arrested for one night, and then he was let go.
For
Jacob's death.
For the murder.
Mm-hmm. There's no official charges that were pressed.
Right.
But he was arrested. And we went to the police about what happened to me. I filled out a police report, or I was interviewed, and they filled out a police report. I signed it. My mom signed it.
Mm-hmm.
My cousin also reported him. Nothing happened. He was friends with the police. He played basketball with them every Saturday. They were all buddies. There's no record of any of this. There's no record of me reporting sexual abuse. There's no record of my cousin reporting him for making those phone calls. There's no record of him even being charged or in jail.
So all that paperwork just poof disappeared somewhere.
It's like magic.
Yeah.
So we had the case after that. We were like defeated. You know, the DA is basically a misogynistic jerk who I have no respect for. And if I never have to see him ever again in my life, I'll be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that he one day pays for what he's done, because he's openly allowed somebody who is a danger to children and to women to live their lives freely and continue to be predatory,
mm-hmm,
and harmful and abusive. And so if there's any karma in the world, I hope that comes true, because he's responsible for that by refusing at that point to do anything about it.
Yeah. I mean, there was 5 years time difference between Jacob's murder and when your mom finally went to him. That's a long time for things to happen.
Yeah.
So to hold her accountable and say that she's changing her story based on a handful of words right after her son died, and ignore everything that she's telling and everything that you're telling them.
Well, and I don't think so was honest. She didn't think so. At that point, she thought she knew this person.
Well, sure.
At that point, he had yet to have proven to us what he was capable of.
Right.
And so she did not think so.
No, she's telling the truth then.
Now
stories, like, yeah, experiences affect your perception of people. So
100%. He's proven now.
Yeah.
that he's capable of it.
Yep.
And so we kind of gave up. And at that point, there was a 6-year statute of limitations. So that was on this type of crime. So that was the last opportunity, really. Mm-hmm. But in 2005, we asked a cold case investigator to look at it again because we heard that they were working on repealing the statute of limitations. And that's the file that I sent you mm-hmm. that I have. Sergeant Christensen from the state police, he did an amazing job, despite the fact that there was a tremendous amount of paperwork and evidence missing from the file.
Mm-hmm.
He was still able to uncover a lot of information. And we learned some things in that. We learned that that Joe had confessed to killing Jacob. We don't know what was said in the confession because there's no record of it. There's no recording. There's no transcript. But we know he confessed. We know that he failed a polygraph examination. We didn't know that before, but we learned that through mm-hmm. the records that we requested. And the two questions specifically that he failed were, did you ever intentionally hit Jacob on the head? And did you intentionally harm Jacob, causing his injuries? Something like that. I don't remember the exact wording, but basically mm-hmm. he said no, and he failed that. So the investigator sent a letter to the DA and said, hey, I just looked at this. I think you should reopen the case. And the DA said, sorry, it's a different DA, but the statute of limitations has passed. And again, we felt like we were stuck.
Yeah.
And then I started this show and I started digging into things and looking deeper and talking to people and trying to figure out, you know, really what the real story was, because I just didn't believe
mm-hmm.
that it was possible for somebody to murder an infant and get away with it. It was, not only is it unacceptable, but it seems absurd. I feel like I'm in the twilight zone. Like how?
Yeah.
How?
It should not happen.
It doesn't make any sense.
Nope.
So I started telling the story. I created a petition and I wanted the Attorney General to intervene. And
is the petition still ongoing?
So the petition has been answered.
Okay.
I'm not going to go into specifics on that right now, nope, but I will tell
that's
you
fine.
That
I just want to know whether or not I should include it in the notes for people to sign if you still needed signatures, but if it's already out there and done, then great.
We're good. We're good on that front.
Okay.
Which is good. It's a good thing.
Yes, it is.
Because I learned that there was a Supreme Court case in the mid 2000s, a state Supreme Court case that ruled basically and set precedent, which basically means that Jacob's case is no longer under a statute of limitations.
Oh, good. That's amazing.
The problem we have is that if he was indeed charged and if it is showing that he was charged, we do have an issue in New Mexico with a constitutional law that says defendants are entitled to a speedy trial.
Oh.
And it would be very hard to argue that 34 years later is a speedy trial.
Right.
I'm not saying that's not possible, but it would be very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
So I've asked the DA to look at the case again. The DA is considering it. Okay. I don't know what's going to happen.
Okay.
I can tell you that I'm working on what I'm doing now is building awareness and building media pressure, mm-hmm. which is why I'm doing this. And, you know, if you've heard this story on multiple shows, I apologize. But,
no, don't apologize at all.
This is how I have to do this.
Yes.
I need Jacob's case to go viral. I need Jacob's case to be out there, top of mind in the larger community, in mm-hmm. the larger society. I need it to be so present and so out there that the DA will look bad if he chooses not to act on this.
Mm-hmm.
So what I need is I need people to share his story. I need people to talk to people. If you know somebody that has a platform that would be willing to share Jacob's story, or if you have a platform and you would be willing to share Jacob's story, I need that momentum right now. If the DA declines, I have another, I'm working on another plan. I'm not going to talk about that until that day comes. I don't want to show all my cards yet.
Sure.
But
makes sense.
I may need more help in the future, well, depending on what the DA says. But right now, what I need.
I'm here to help and do whatever I can.
Thank you. But right now, what I need is people to share Jacob's story.
Yeah. And you just wrote an article about it.
On Medium.
On Medium. Yeah, medium.com. So I'll link that too, so that people can read it. Because it's a quick read, but it's well written, and it tells people what they need to know about this case.
Thank you. So that's where I'm at now. I'm not giving up. I know that there's a really low chance that Jacob will get justice, but I'm not stopping with Jacob. Mm-hmm. And I'm not giving up on him either. And so I can see in the future that there would be opportunities for me to lobby the state government to change laws, to change the way these cases are handled, the way they're investigated, because there is so many. We have so many here in New Mexico, so many children who are murdered every day because our system is broken. And then the system that's in place to hold these people accountable for what they've done is also broken. And it's a disaster. You couple that with extreme poverty and lack of education, and you start seeing horrible patterns in this community. Family members that are trafficking their children in order to survive. It's horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And not enough is being done about it. So that's what I'm doing. I'm bringing awareness. Eventually it's going to lead to hopefully some legislation and advocacy on that side of it. As much as I like true crime and as much as I like weird stuff and podcasting, and I'm going to keep doing these things, I have one focus, and my podcast is a tool to help with that. But I really am on a mission, like I said in my article.
Yeah.
And I'm not backing down, and I'm not going to stop.
Well, you have a ton of people behind you and supporting you, and it may not mean much or sound like much, but I am so proud of you and everything that you have done. You are one of the most intelligent, strong, tenacious people I've ever met in my life. And I don't know what I would do if I were in your shoes, but you are definitely setting the example of what is possible when you are focused and driven and striving for justice for someone you love.
And
I appreciate you so much coming on the show and sharing your story and sharing Jacob's story. And like I said, I'll do whatever I can to help whenever you need
it. Thank you for sharing your platform with me and with Jacob and my mom. And thank you for your kind words. That's really sweet. And it means a lot. I have a lot of respect for you and I appreciate you. So
I'd love for you to do another plug for your shows. Let everyone know where they can find you and all that jazz, all your social media and all that too.
Sure. Yeah. So you can find True Consequences wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm on every podcatcher. And if you don't see me on one, then, message me and let me know and I'll add myself to it. You can find out more information at trueconsequences.com. Facebook and Instagram is True Consequences Pod, and Twitter is True Cons Pod.
Awesome. Thank you again, Eric, so much. It's It is an honor to be even a slight part of this journey with you. And I hope that everyone will take the time to go and listen to your three episodes about Jacob on your show and check out your social media, keep up to date with this case, read your article and everything. And just please, everyone, show as much support as you can for Eric, because he is facing a monolith of challenges, but he can do it. I know he can do it. He will find a way. So thank you all again for listening. And Eric, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your candor. This has been unbelievable, and I appreciate it.
I appreciate you.
Thank you all so much for listening, and a huge thank you to Eric for coming on the show and sharing his and Jacob's stories. Please make sure to follow Eric on social media and support him as he works tirelessly to get justice for his baby brother and other children in New Mexico who have suffered a similar fate. I've also put a link for the article that Eric recently wrote on Medium in my episode notes. So please take a few seconds, sign the petition, read the article, show your support for Eric, his family, and for baby Jacob, as well as all of the other children who have been victims of abuse and murder. As always, if you have a particular case that you're interested in, please reach out to Mask of Sanity on any of the social medias or shoot me an email at maskofsanitythepodcast@gmail.com. And as always, a huge thank you to all of my Patreon supporters, everyone who has supported the show through my merch store or my Ko-fi account. And please join me next week on Wednesday for my next regularly scheduled Mask of Sanity episode. Until next time, stay safe, friends. Mask of Sanity is partnered with the Oracle Network.